Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Hey, everybody. We are thrilled to be here today with Ryan Klein and Chase Williams, SEOs who have come from in-house to their own agency. Thrilled to have you on the SEO Insider today. Tell me about your agency and your journey. How did you get here?
I've been legal marketing for about 12 years. I worked at a traditional digital marketing agency in Central Florida, working with all sorts of businesses, and believe it or not, really loved working with lawyers. And I tell that story all the time, and people are like, out of, you know, all these different industries, like lawyers. I said, yeah, they're driven, they're motivated, they're no BS, and I always liked working with them and their campaigns. So I went from the agency working with multiple industries to right in-house with several law firms. So I started with a criminal defense law firm that Seth, I know you know near and dear with that fellow, Bill Umansky, worked with him for quite some time, and then went off to a law firm in South Florida, did PI for a bit. So worked in-house for a while, did some consulting. And then after the, I guess my work was done working in-house, I guess you could say, once, you know, we can say in SEO world, ranked for everything, if you will. Seemed kind of appealing to kind of take what I had learned and try to, you know, scale it in an agency.
That's awesome. You know, one of the things that I've sort of noticed over the years, and, you know, as we took an in-house team and turned it into an agency, was that it's one thing to do work well for a site, right? As you said, like, if you put all of your effort into one site day in, day out, but to do it at scale takes a bunch of different skill sets beyond, I think, just, you know, one person getting one site ranked. And the advantage, I think, when you start doing it and diversifying, and part of the reason I can speak for myself when we spun into an agency, was that it allowed us to keep talent that we couldn't have kept otherwise. Your case in point, right? It was too hard for an organization to keep somebody at your caliber to themselves because you build and grow and wanted more. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you've experienced, the differences between doing this from the agency side versus doing this in-house.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to answer a question. And what's great about the questions is you'll be answering them too. We'll hear both sides of it. So I guess one of the first things was, so partnered with Chase here and you know, my business partner since day one, meaning at University of Central Florida. And we didn't really break into legal just yet. Like, it wasn't immediately legal. It was kind of an agency start, and we worked with kind of what we could for quite some time. And it wasn't for years until we kind of broke into that niche. So I guess one of the, Chase, you got something?
I was just going to say, like, starting a business, like, you always see those silly Instagram things, like, you got to go knocking on doors. And like, we literally knocked on doors. Like, we were living in Manhattan at the time, literally knocking on restaurants and bars, and we started doing their social media and their SEO. And it was just, you know, it was almost like an episode out of The Sopranos at one point, where we're trying to get paid and we're like, how come, you know, this person hasn't paid us in 3 months. He still wants us to work. So it was definitely we're like, we got to get out of this. We got to figure out a niche. We got to, you know, do something different.
Well, no, I smile on a couple levels. That your story reminds me of so many different things. One, sort of what, you know, I can speak for myself, we've attempted over the years to work with some people who had come out of fine law. And one of the situations we had was somebody pre-COVID who worked for fine law, who literally, I think, walked through office buildings, an attractive person who was able to knock on doors and be able to walk in and sell stuff. And I think part of the reason that fine law and Martindale Hubbell, prior to their sale of their brands, was so successful, was that they had the search product, right? They had Westlaw and LexisNexis, respectively. And so people were constantly walking into offices, and that many of the relationships that last to this day, some of the people are still at Fine Law, some of the people have spun out and taken the people with them, that all of that was that, shoe leather going in and meeting people. I understand completely that when you're in multiple different verticals and restaurants can barely pay their bills as is, so you're going to come last. That must have been quite an experience trying to not just get in the door, but find somebody who's economically viable to continue to pay.
So first question I have for you, because it's like the interesting moment, you know, when you're like, okay, we're doing this, we're doing the agency, we're going to work with law firms, and you're used to creating a strategy and plans and having your tight knit group that's just working solely on your, you know, several digital properties, when you start kind of taking that model or that format and applying it elsewhere, like you want, and I'm sure your experience, you want to provide that kind of experience you do for yourself and dedicate, you know, hours and hours and hours, but you can't limit that scope. So like, what was the first moment where you're like, we can still have a fantastic campaign without necessarily like having to be all over it, like day in, day out, if you know what I mean?
You know, it's interesting because I think that this was sort of like working smarter, not harder, something like in law school, right? You could study like 20 hours a day and kill yourself. But I think the people who did best were the people that figured out what was important, worked on that, learned that, and then kicked ass on tests. Like the people who killed themselves 24/7, and at present company included at times, weren't doing as well as people who understood what was most important. So I think that at scale, especially as you start to see multiple sites, you see what is working and what's not. And by focusing on the things that actually move the needle, you're able to deliver results. That there's a nervous energy, whether it be at school or whether it be in marketing, where you can spin your wheels a lot. And that I feel that what I love is to watch, okay, we see this work, now let's replicate it. We see this not working, let's not do this. So that understanding how precious time is as a variable, you know, one of the companies that it was early in the legal space called Nifty, a guy named Mike Ramsey is an awesome, awesome guy. One of the things he did early on was he started charging by the hour. And I didn't love that. I liked the idea. Part of the reason I got into this was I hated billable hours. And this world was like, hey, people could pay a flat monthly fee and we do all this work. And I think that one of the things that agency owners look at is, you know, squeaky wheel gets oiled. So very often you can, and I assume you've seen this, that if you have a client that people either love or fear, that they may spend a ton of time with that client beyond the economics of what they've paid. And so one of the tricks as an agency to stay afloat is you have to make sure you're responsible in putting in the resources that are needed. As the web has gotten more competitive, right? Nothing you don't see on a day in and day out basis, that stuff that was easier to do 3-4 years ago is harder to do now as things have become more competitive and Google has made some changes, that we are required to figure out how many resources, and that before what a few $1,000s might move the needle, it now may take a lot more in resources. And that if you don't have the client willing to invest in that, there are certain things that can't be done, which means that you're likely not going to be set up for success. And it's a constant balancing act because, you know, I would say, and I'm going in a full circle here, and I'll bring it back to you, which is, you know, you've seen this, I'm sure, as we have. When we first started, we had people that came to us from other agencies. And I was always shocked because some of them were very good agencies. But I realized that one of the odd things about digital agencies, specifically in law, is when people sign a contract for a number, it rarely goes up meaningful. I think we're starting to see that break and change, but that if legacy contracts only had so many resources, and while that might've been enough to get the needle moved early on, as it's gotten more competitive, we've seen that people look at it differently. And it's interesting because you would think, oh, I'm just going to go to Ryan and Chase and say, you know what, I want to up my budget. But like, there's something about the human dynamic that very often people say, you know what, I look at you in this world for this price point, you're more than capable of doing something at a higher price point, but people sort of pigeonhole you psychologically into that. And so that, I think that's one of the tough things for agencies to deal with. And for law firms, it's very rare that somebody says, hey, I want to go double my spend with you. People just don't think that way. But if the world has changed and the amount of labor and resources it takes to move the needle, whether it be through links or content, et cetera, that very often a budget that was set 7 years ago may not be able to be a viable budget now to get done what somebody needs to accomplish their goals.
Real quick, it sounds, were you eavesdropping our leadership meeting earlier this week? It's a very, very real timely dilemma. And, you know, Chase,
it's a constant one. And that, you know, there's one thing where your consultant may say to you, hey, we should raise X percent per year. And that's awesome. And most of us didn't. Most of us got in. We're thankful that somebody wanted to pay us for their work. But given what's required today, the competitive landscape, particularly in PI, that, you know, a few $1,000s a month doesn't move the needle. And that if you don't have those resources, and it's really tough because when you have that conversation, I mean, this is talking agent to agency, a certain number of people are going to be like, you know what, I'm going to try this brand instead. And I know for ourselves, we've had a lot of success. You asked, you know, the fact that you can't work on it all the time. I've seen the opposite, which was we got some amazing results for limited resources earlier on. People before us, like the generation before we were even in business, you know, they basically put a website up and it worked. Now you need to do work, you know, six years ago, you know, it took work. Now it's exponentially more. And so having those conversations, because you know that you crushed it with what you were charging a few years ago, it's likely not to be able to move the needle the same way now. And that those can be some tough conversations.
It all goes back to talent too. So I know on our end, we want to perform in a very high level. So we're not paying a marketing coordinator the same we were paying 7 years ago. I mean, it's like almost double, it's double.
Look, so, I could tell you that it's been double during COVID almost. Yeah. I mean, it's not quite double, but it's significant. And look, we both know that talent is a limiting force. There's a huge opportunity cost to training somebody. So now you're dealing with, you know, we're seeing inflation in everything, right? You know, everything is now significantly more. Flights, hotels, everything has gone through the roof. People, your talent is demanding that. We had the great resignation of people are bouncing. And if you have somebody that you like, you've trained, that you want for the future, you want to make it worth their while, your margins change dramatically. No different than if somebody's doing it in-house, right? I mean, part of the reason that we have a business is because doing it in-house isn't easy. I can speak for myself. You know, we put ads out in the DC market for talent. And historically, we would get people in the six figures with SEO on their resume from an association, but with no meaningful experience that you guys would find valuable. And so in each of these instances, you have the next opportunity. If you can't do in-house, if you can't get people from the outside, it's training people themselves. And that it's always back and forth. I apologize. I don't know if it's because Biden has COVID. We've had presidential or vice presidential motorcades going up our block all day today. I assume it was the vice president, not the president, but like this, you know, 50 car motorcade goes by and with a limo with US flags on it. So something's going on at the White House today.
I can pick up what you're saying with the talent, and I'm sure you've had all sorts of really fun experiences in the past couple of years. And like, you know, hiring in-house, let's say there's like, you know, three categories. We have an in-house content team. So content is like a team, AMs, client experience, and SEOs. And content's always been pretty straightforward because you get the samples, you can see this is not very good or it is good. And it's been kind of easy to vet that. AMs, you can probably, you know, figure it out if they're going to be a good fit after a bit. But SEOs, and especially since, you know, after all, this SEO podcast, that is a extremely difficult kind of a gauntlet, you know, to find people that are like kind of the real deal there.
Because I've made more mistakes in hired talent, you know, like on spec. And it's terrible because anybody who's with, like, I think snobbishly, particularly with legal, right? So first, legal has a level of competitiveness that most don't. And we've had a very hard time hiring from the outside. Thankfully, my partner in this venture is really good with culture and building a team. And we have a huge fellowship program. So we have people in school and then even post-school who come paid, but who rotate through different departments, see what they like. And about half of those people end up as employees when they graduate. And that, if we didn't do that, we would be dead. Almost like a summer associate program in a law firm, because we don't see resumes with talent. And when they, even with the name SEO on the resume, it is claiming dollars that don't justify the talent, at least in my opinion. They're nice people, but they don't know what it takes to move the needle from the level of clients that we both deal with. And so I'm always very, it's been a struggle I would wish to have. And one of the things that I push for both Price Battle at the law firm and with the agency is to constantly be recruiting. but it's not like their SEOs falling off trees that I love. And just like law firms, if you take like Cravath is one of these big corporate firms in New York where I was, I spent some time before law school as an analyst. And in doing so, they historically, I think it's changed, never hired laterals. They only took people in their summer class, and then maybe they'd hire them straight out of law school. But everybody came with no experience so that they could train them the Cravath way. This is how you formulate a letter. This is how you formulate a brief. We do it our way in this setup. And there were no bad habits. And in some respect, we've sort of had to follow that model because we just don't like a lot. Now, you want the inspiration. You want new ideas coming. But we've had to sort of supplement going to conferences, listening to podcasts, you know, doing webinars and just networking to bring those new ideas to the table. Because for the most part, we, again, with exceptions, many of the people out there on the market, even some with names, don't necessarily have the goods.
Yeah, it's like, I think the SEO title is the absolute catfish of all jobs. Like we brought people on our team. We interview them. Like they probably have like 6 or 7 interviews. We give them like theoretical SEO questions. They do very well. 1 week in, we're like, this person's a bullshitter.
And again, because of that, we saw that early on. We just haven't gone through that process. I'm just sort of jaded. Not that we just, you know, and I see this, I'm trying to think, I just saw an ad posting for one of the big non-legal SEO agencies, really, really top name, saw an ad posting. It was like, you know, please apply, no experience needed. Because once you know what you're doing, part of it is, and then part of the reason the agency works well, right? If you're in-house, you have to learn everything, right? That's why in-house is such a tough thing for a smaller firm, because yes, the person might know content, but will they know links? And they might know links, but do they know technical? And they know technical, do they know paid? Like, there's so many different skill sets that are needed. And so for me, at scale, once you know what you're doing, and that's where I feel like Blue Shark's fortunate, that once you have a methodology that works, not that you're constantly not experimenting and checking new stuff, but the idea is executing on that work. Can you put the labor behind it? So when we were talking earlier in the conversation, using like Nifty as an example, where they build by the hour versus here the flat monthly fee, all flat monthly fees, whether it be a legal case, like a criminal case, or whether it be for an agency, are essentially reverse engineering an hourly rate and then figuring out how to do that in a profitable way. You know, and if you look at the end of the day, most agencies have X margin. And then if your hours allow for the labor cost to be reasonable, you can have something to take home at the end of the day. If you're not careful, and I'm sure you've seen this over the history of the agency, there are times where you take your eye off the ball, you can spend so much on labor that you end up cutting into the fact, like, why am I running this business? I'd be better off working for a firm. And so you're constantly that cat and mouse between, you know, figuring out how to have a methodology and scale it, but hoping for that silver bullet or that fairy dust to come from an outside person, as you've seen, and I've seen myself, you know, much easier said than done. And more often than not, the window dressing or the catfish example you gave, it's not quite what the Facebook profile is professing.
Yeah, we track all of our time internally, and there's definitely moments we have where we realize, okay, for the past 3 months, we've been paying to work for this person. So something needs to change, whether it's the scope of work or going back to the client and saying, hey, you know, we're trying to get you results, and to get those results, we need to increase the scope or that you're billable. So it's definitely a conversation that we have internally very often.
Yeah, no, I look, that's what's so interesting about agencies. Cause like a lot of, you know, a number of us in the agency world speak, you know, on a semi-regular basis, but there's also a certain amount of like keeping cards close to your vest. But as you see, there are truisms, other things that we've talked about on this podcast, agency to agency owner, you know, the struggle over, exclusivity as the world becomes more global. People have offices at all different places. These are the different things where these are tough conversations. And before I had an agency, I remember agency friends talking about all the issues we've talked about today and more, you know, that was their struggle with their agency. So very often, one of my mentors who had an early agency, you know, he always talked to me before I had an agency about the struggles and issues that he was facing. And then once I ran an agency, I'm like, oh, that's what he was talking about. It was like, I would always have these moments where I was like, oh, that's what he meant. Like, you know, and, you know, walking into an agency where you see, you referred to earlier, what you need to pay people. Some of it is inflation and the job market. But part of it is if you have good people and you have them for 5 years and 10 years and hopefully more, then a person wants that stability, and that if you want to be able to pay somebody enough that you're not losing your senior people. I mean, that's, you know, look at the account management type position. The loss of an account manager isn't just a loss of an employee, but it's the relationship with all those clients. And that, yes, you can get a new person, but I can speak as a lawyer, having been an AVO advertiser prior to the sale of internet brands. It was so stupid. I looked at my sales reps as consultants that could help me figure out how to spend my money well. And every 9 months, there'd be a turnover. It was sometimes less. And it was like, you finally got comfortable. You finally trusted somebody. And they're getting you value. So, you know, look at expenses. It's not like a straight line. That, like, as people become super valuable to you, you want to be able to pay them not just market, but slightly more than market, which goes into the economics of what you're charging your clients.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about briefly what you're saying about SEOs. I mean, like, the aim of the relationship, I mean, the value become, especially if they're upselling, especially if they're scaling with the clients. I mean, that's all whole other side of the value too. But SEOs, I feel like almost like at every corner, you're dealing with some sort of like significant catch 22. So you mentioned like the specialization, you know, from our standpoint, we'd love to have like this guy or gal is fantastic at link building. They're like changing the way that we do links. And then they come on board, and that, you know, SEOs can be very growth oriented. They come on board and say, yeah, I'll do links, but I want to learn, you know, local, and I want to learn technical. And then it's like, well, we want to utilize your specialization. Yeah,
we don't play that game. Partly from day one, I mean, you've heard me speak early on. It was content, links, technical, local, and paid, the, you know, fifth element. Now LSA is a subset of paid, but each group, that's why during a fellowship, we have people rotate to figure out where they want to be. But to me, like, I don't want dabblers. It's true with law, right? Because you have clients that do PI, like my firm, we do PI, we do criminal, we have family of trust and estates. I don't want the trust and estates person doing a criminal case, and I don't want the family lawyer doing a PI case. For me, it's like, you want people who are really good in their lane and stay in their lane. Now, if somebody says, hey, I want a career change, I hope to be able to help them and do that. And we've promoted people from, let's say, links to accounts, and that's their new home. But I really don't want people dabbling in whether the master of none. I want them to be as good as they can, because assuming that we know what we're doing on the execution of something, now the question is, can we have the people and the manpower or woman power to do that?
Yeah, I would say with our team, like, there's definitely like a focus on specialization. There is like awareness and there is involvement. Like, there will be like exposure to it. And of course, we would never want to be like, this person's a 10 out of 10 on links and they're a 4 out of 10 on, you know, content optimization, but they just want to switch it up and let's just do it for the sake of doing it. Like, you want everyone to operate at their highest level. But yeah, there's always that growth, you know, mindset. There's always like, what's next, that comes with like SEO too. You know, people that are like, you know, I'm doing this. This is what my day looks like now. Is this what my day is going to look like a year from now? That's always like the thing. It's generational too.
Yeah, I feel fortunate. I feel like our methodology has been within each of our silos, that the management within those has given opportunity and pay. And so that we've been able to sort of take the best and brightest and continue to give them opportunities. With the growth that we've had, I'm sure you guys have had, there is no shortage of need for leadership. And so, you know, we haven't lost many people that we've wanted to keep. You know, it's a pretty small list. And that the ability to find people a home and a growth path, I think, yes, obviously very, very important. And that, you know, something that if you don't do that, you will lose talent. It's not always easy, right? Because I've seen over and over again, both law firm and agency, there are times when you promote somebody from, you know, to use the E-Myth terminology, from the tactician to the manager, and technician to manager. And that when you do that, not everybody's cut out for that next piece, you know, and that's a frustrating piece, because there are times when you want to promote somebody and you want to give them a career path, but you realize they're really good at links, content, tech, whatever it is, and they're really bad at managing people. I'll share with you a story early on that made us successful. And when I was starting, it was still a combination of Price Benefits in-house It was actually before we started the agency. I had a situation where we had a person who was a very competent SEO, but they were the most senior person. So they were managing the in-house team, and they were an awful manager. Their communication was terrible. Their instincts weren't right. And I had a life moment where David Brenton, who was coming up through the ranks, he'd been a fellow with the firm, he'd done marketing. And I was like, okay, I have this wonder kid here. You know, let me try this. And this was a life moment. So I had this person who was making a salary, and I said, look, I'm not going to demote your salary, but I have to allow this person to manage and run the group. So the first thing, and people see this at law firms a lot with, let's say, an operations person and then a COO. And I have a friend going through this right now where moving, if you go to the person in operations, say, hey, you're not going to be the COO and you're going to be, and I'm going to cut your pay. That's not going to work. But if money stays the same, there are people, and I'll go off on a little bit of a rant. I remember interviewing for jobs early on. Everyone talked about how many people you manage. And that was the number of people that you managed always became indicative of how important or how much you progressed in your career. But as you know, Ryan, if I gave you the opportunity to sit there and just do SEO all day, you didn't have to do payroll, you didn't have to hire anybody, you didn't have to fire anybody, you didn't have to do anything, you might love that. The management comes with a whole set of headaches and issues. And so one of the things that I look at when I look at these situations is, we took this one person and said, hey, we're not going to demote you money-wise, but I need this guy to run the department. And that lasted like 3 years. And it was a wonderful run. And we wouldn't have Blue Shark today had we not taken that chance. But I think that knowing when somebody can manage and when somebody really, they may want to manage, but they shouldn't, that decision alone can make or break an organization.
Yeah, we have this conversation all the time. I'm sure that a lot of agencies are, especially when you're ramping up and you're getting people that have been working in the industry for years and years and years, and you start off, maybe you get some entry level or 1 or 2 years, maybe a senior person here and there, but you start bringing on really talented people and it doesn't become a seniority game anymore. It's like, you don't get the promotion just because you've been here the longest. Then you start going head to head with people that are really, kicking ass from day one because they've been in it for a while and they may earn it over the seniority. And it's an interesting crossroads because you navigate that and you have those kind of tough conversations with people that are like, well, I put in my time. And it's like, well, is it time? Is it loyalty? Is it talent? Like it comes down to what's going to benefit the company as a whole. It's not like a individual kind of thing. It's a team thing.
Right. But it's multifaceted, right? Because what benefits the company, but at the same time, what's going to keep somebody happy in there? And what somebody thinks they want may not be what's really, because if they're a terrible manager, not only is it not good for your company, but it's not really a good career path for that person because they're never going to, it's not going to work and they're going to hit a brick wall over and over again. Very cool. Well, this is great. We have to make sure we do this again and look forward. It sounds like a busy conference season coming up this fall with a bunch of rescheduled stuff and a bunch of new conferences popping up.
MTMP, as always.
Yeah, I'm actually just getting the agenda set for the business of law with them, so that should be interesting. Chase, any final words?
No, it's awesome to, you guys have such a similar background, so it's cool to see you guys riff off one another. There's not many people that have the same background as you two, where it's like, you come from, most agency owners don't come from law firms. They just think law is sexy to get into and it's profitable, and that's why they start working in a legal firm. Kind of like, I mean it'd be like me, but I know Ryan and he's my business partner, so I get a pass. Well,
for the record, for our listeners, I'm not a lawyer, but I did work in-house.
So I'll leave you with this story. I know I've done a bunch of story, but I'll leave you with this for Chase, because your background there. My job, when I left big law back in like 98 during the first dot-com bubble, I helped found a company before US law called EasyCD.com. Pre-Napster, basically people could choose their music. We'd burn it on a CD. For those of you younger listening, that was something that you put music on before we did. Anyway, so we would mail it out. And what you were talking about, like with walking door to door, just to bring this back, reminds me like where I would get a lead on some guy that had a catalog, because it was all about getting rights to music. And some guy claimed to have the rights to all this music. And West 34th Street, I go up in a like in a condo building to like the 60th floor. And there's like this guy meets me, and like the apartment, it was so shady. There were like curtains between rooms with young women sleeping in each of them. And this guy allegedly had, and like, I can't believe that I am now in the midst of some weird, like music for sale. There's trafficking going on over here. I was just like, this is not for me. It was one of those life moments. But I did get to hang out and meet Chuck D and a bunch of people from the rap industry, because that was one of the few areas where the guys held their own rights. And we were able to do some interesting deals. Dougie Fresh, Chuck D, and others. And my claim to fame was that I taught Flavor Flav how to use a search engine. And so that was my claim
to fame. And that should be on the front of your website, the first thing.
Did a trade show, and he was holding a Big Mac in one hand and typing words into Google on the other. That was my
that's awesome.
Favorite moment.
I feel like the kids in high school or maybe even middle school that used to burn CDs were the first true entrepreneurs out there, because they would be hustling.
Very good. Thanks so much for your time, guys, and look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.